I'd like to respectfully call the October 21st, 2008 meeting for the San Luis Coastal Board of Trustees here at Delmar Elementary School in beautiful Morro Bay to order, and would begin by mentioning what had occurred in closed session, which we started at 6 o'clock and finished about 10 minutes ago. The board considered issues regarding labor negotiations, a student discipline matter, COSSE waiver, the exit exam, and superintendent's goal setting. And I'd like to ask the board also if there is any discussion or any change in the agenda items tonight, the way they're structured. Seeing none, we'll move into, there's no action on the closed session items, we'll move into approval of minutes.
Move approval of the minutes of October 7th.
We have a motion by the quicker and faster, Marilyn Rogers, and the second by the slower but still forceful, Walt Millar. Is there any discussion on those minutes?
I just have a question.
Mark, and then we'll go down to Chris and to Adrian.
Thank you, Chairman. During the report on the Santa Lucia Regional Occupation Program, it was my intent to share with the public that in page 4, item 2 in the last sentence, part of the reason there are unused slots may be because ROP classes are perceived to not qualify as A through G classes for UC CSU admissions requirements. I would be remiss in not pointing out that many of the ROP classes do qualify. So if the board would indulge me in correcting the minutes.
Do you want to correct it or add it to this meeting's minutes as part of the discussion? What do you think would be best?
I don't think I can do that.
Since I wasn't present at the meeting, I can't speak to what was actually said. And if he thinks that's what he said and you'll accept that correction, that's fine.
Okay. I and second your correction, whatever you want.
We have a motion by Marilyn, a second by Walt. Do the people who moved and seconded it accept Mark's amendment to include that?
Yes.
Okay, so we're fine with that. Thank you, Mark. And then we have Chris.
Yeah, and I would ask just in addition on page 3 where it says that Mark, we're proud that Mark was asked to serve on the CSBA conference committee replacing me, and I would just ask that it say whose term has expired.
I see that also.
So we have a request by Chris. Is that acceptable by the motion and second? So that'll be added. And then Adrian had one item.
Oh, yeah, I have a question on the item 7. The last paragraph, it said board discussion ensued and administration was directed to identify the concerns of teachers and provide a response to the board. Would it be possible to have some kind of addendum with a list of what the questions of the board were?
What page are you on? Just so
I'm
I know.
On page 6.
Page 6, okay.
Because I know you had quite a few questions, and Walter had some excellent questions, such as, what about the non-essential standards? And I had some questions, too, such as, you know, what would be the problem with having a way to opt out, either individually or as a department? I mean, I think we had some good questions. I know you had quite a few, John. If we could sort of reconstruct that list, and just as an addendum or something.
Okay. Chris was going to make a comment, then we'll come back to that as a correction. Chris, did you want to say something about that? And then we'll. Okay, let's wait then. Dr. Valentine, in light of that, there was a list that I think was attached to your Friday.
Yeah, that and that list we can share out in any fashion we want. They were derived from your questions.
Maybe we could just amend the minutes to just add, provide a response to the board's questions, numerous questions, and that'll take care of the minutes, and then we can get the other information, some of which we've already received from Dr. Valentine.
Well, Adrian, did you want that as part of the minutes so it's available to the public?
Yes, I did, as an addendum of some sort.
Okay, so just so we can get through this, is there anybody on the board that is opposed to the information that was provided by Dr. Valentine to become a part of the minutes. Anybody opposed to that?
Become a part of these minutes? They didn't exist at the time these minutes were produced.
No, they were
oh, the questions, not the response to the
no.
question. Oh, okay, sure.
It's just the questions that were raised that were quantified.
I thought you meant response.
Yeah, I would use the summary that we had.
It's all right.
Okay, then I have no problem.
Are you okay? Well, so the list of questions that Dr. Valentine provided from the meeting will be attached as an addendum to these minutes, and then Chris.
Yeah, I just had a question on item number 11. We had that, I thought that was an action item, and it's not listed as having action taken on it. And I was just wondering if somebody could help refresh my memory and tell me whether we did, in fact, take action on that item.
I think we did take it.
It's not shown as having action taken on it in the minutes.
We have a confirmation from our director of personnel and also from
if you can recall who moved and seconded, we can record that, if not only to check the tape to see.
Well, it's on my notes because I keep track of that. I can give that to you tomorrow. I keep track of who made the motion and the second, and the vote was 7-0 to allow the district, as requested, to create those positions, correct? And I have that. So if everybody's okay with that, we'll modify the minutes if that's okay with Marilyn and Walt, and I'll contact Kim tomorrow to give her the motion and the second. Okay, so we're good on that. So all in favor, if there's no other comments, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, no, we have to take a, we're gonna take a break now after that.
Mr. President, before we move on to public comment, I was just wondering about the huge spike in attendance at the board meeting. I hear that Jim Miller's class from Cal Poly has come by for heaven only knows what.
Okay.
We're glad to see you.
It may have been received by board members that they want to acknowledge.
Well, I know that we did get an email from Mr. Nett today regarding questions about the benchmarks and some other things, so I would acknowledge that.
Okay. Yeah, I think the board received that, and I also want to note and thank Mr. Nett for sending that and to mention that the email is going to be presented to staff to discuss and respond to that email. Jim's not here tonight, but I will recognize that. Thank you, Chris. Catherine.
Would that be on both subjects that he raised?
Yes.
Both, okay.
Yes, I think it was benchmark and the other.
And stipends for other activities other than coaching.
Yes, okay. That'll be discussed and directed. Any other correspondence that anybody's aware of? Okay, I think we're good then. Now we have an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on any matter that pertains to school district business. Would anybody like to do that at this time? Bruce.
Bruce Bedrigan, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association president. I was speaking to our site reps at the last site rep meeting that we had, and of course the site reps represent all of the different schools in our district, and one of the concerns came up, and I was talking to Melissa Newman about it today, was just a concern about summer school. And just to give the school board a heads up on this, one of the things the teachers are talking about, and I think they'd like you to go to students during summer school, and we should not be doubling those class sizes to an extent where teachers feel like they're ineffective trying to teach these classes because the classes are so large. And then mix in ELL students with the regular students, and it's just an untenable position for teachers to be in. And I know that the remedy would be our district money, but perhaps Ed Valentine could look at that and work with the school board and also talk with some of the teachers about brainstorming a way that we can make summer school a fruitful and positive experience for those students. I think it would help in our SIP planning and it would be good for students overall.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to address the board tonight? Okay. Seeing none, thank you. We're now going to move into the reports, and there are no student representatives tonight from the high schools. Is there anybody on the staff, board members, or administrators who may wish to report on anything? Mark.
And then I was going to let Walt go first.
You want to defer to Walt?
Thank you, Mark. That's very kind of you.
Mr. Millar.
I'll be quick. I want to thank Dr. Valentine for providing information on the Morro Bay lockdown situation. I think it's pretty clear that they have a very good grasp of what happened during that event. I have to say the solutions to the problems are daunting, to say the least. Plus, you're planning around a hopefully never occurring event. But I do appreciate the fact that
looking at a marketing strategy for maintaining and actually increasing ROP attendance in our district and throughout the county. And I also had an opportunity to meet with Mayor Mitakovich, who spent a great deal of time with me on the CTE grant proposal and helping me understand it. And so the staff here is just wonderful. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. Any other board staff reports at this time? Okay. Seeing none, we have a summer school report, item number two. And that's going to be Mr. Halfman and Ms. Newman.
I'll just introduce the ever-enthusiastic Melissa Newman.
Hi. Thank you so much for listening to my very brief report. What I'll be doing is showing you a few informational slides, and then I have a few pictures of students being excited and educated by some fabulous teachers at summer school this summer. It was a great experience, and all students did learn, and I'm proud of that. It was a wonderful experience. So I think we have, and I'd like to say before, because I don't think it says in the slides, that the school buses made a huge difference for a lot of students who would not have been able to attend had it not been for the buses. So we really thank the board for, and the district for the support for the buses. And then we also had some additional staff, and I'll talk about them a little bit more when this slide comes up. But I guess I need to also thank the district for giving me the opportunity to have my first dip my toe in the administrative waters. Or not, but this will work anyway. We had this year more summer school sites than ever before. There were a total of 7 sites. They included Del Mar Elementary right here. Thanks very much to Janet Gould for hosting us. They're always very hospitable, and they provide a lot of students, and we were happy to be able to provide a lot of students with a great a summer school experience. Hawthorne, this year was their first year in a summer school program. They started directly after school started, or after school ended, so they started a week earlier than the other elementary schools did. Monarch Grove, Pacheco, C.L. Smith, Laguna, and Los Osos Middle School were all involved. All right, I do want to spend a little bit of time on this one, and I'm sorry it's so little. We scanned it into the PowerPoint presentation. So probably the most important things that I would like to highlight are that we had an administrative intern. I'm going to do this.
And I'm allowed to work with us, regardless of the cost. They were being valued. They were everywhere. Also interfacing with teachers. The other thing I guess I need to tell
take it out of the stand.
Oh.
If you want to.
Well, could I just go on?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just keep going. This will be over soon, and I'll be happy, but I think it's pretty and some interesting. All right. Regarding English language learners attending summer school. Of the 1,617 students attending summer school in 2008, 412 were English language learners, which represents 25.5% of the summer school population. The number of English language learners attending San Luis Coastal District is 893, which is about 13% of the total population. So we're happy that our EL population did take advantage of summer school in large numbers and large percentage, and it was a challenge, and I'm proud of the way the teachers in summer school addressed that challenge. Is in every grade in math. Not so much in English. Guess what? EL. Okay, here comes the music. And here comes the students.
Melissa, thank you very much. That was terrific to have that for the students.
Thanks.
We'll get the lights back on and then we may have some questions. Greg, was there anything more beyond the slideshow than questions now?
Certainly.
For you and Melissa, she's right here in a sec. But we can start while we're waiting for the lights to come on. Mark?
No, I'm
sorry. I'll get Melissa back over here to handle questions.
No.
Mark, go ahead. You're good. Okay. Catherine, then Marilyn, then Walt.
Oh, we have questions.
Yes.
Okay. Melissa, I'm over here, sorry. What is the class size ratio student to teacher? Yeah, I just was asked that question over by Chris, and it depends on whether or not we're talking elementary or secondary. The secondary classes were averaging about 30-1, and the elementary classes less than that, average about 15. There were some secondary classes which were larger, up to I think about 40, and there were some which were smaller. We had an intervention math class that was more like 15.
And what about the sprinkling of EL students in those classes? Are they put in subgroups? Are they within the classes with all the other students?
At the secondary level, they were put in with other students because we didn't have enough EL students to make a class. In the elementary grades, we had several EL classes, but we also had EL. The profile of the student, which talks about it, the person's areas that of improvement, that it would be great if we had a little more information, if those were more consistently filled out, because some of the teachers got students with no profile necessarily, or we got students who we didn't know that they were English language learners. So we'd get them to teach them math, but not
know ahead of time that language was a difficulty.
And what about class size? Is that working or not?
I think class size was really okay, but I think that if we could, as the EL population grows, we'll probably need more EL classes, which are specific to EL. I mean, I breezed through it, but you did notice, I think, that the language scores did not improve as much as the math scores did, and if that's because of EL, I'm thinking.
Thank you.
And Marilyn and Will.
Well, I think Catherine pretty much asked the same questions that I had, or addressed my same concerns. A ratio of 30 to 1 or up to 40 to 1 in the secondary is very high. Is that across the board? Or
no.
Just
The classes that were, the larger classes were the classes that students were taking for original credit. So those are students who are more skilled, and they're the more motivated students, so they can handle a larger class more easily than the students who are taking classes for remediation.
Okay, so I wonder if there's a way for us to know on the front end so that we can perhaps plan a little better.
I think we'll be working to make sure that we have a smoother process and maybe a better identification.
Okay, great. Well, Mr. Halfman looks very sad about the whole thing to me, so I'm sure he'll be getting right on it.
As my mother would say, get happy.
Okay. And then Walt had a question.
No. Melissa, what's the takeaway on the EL students' pre-test, post-test being so close?
I think we probably have a couple of issues, and one is that I'm not sure that the tests are accurate, because I'm not sure when you ask a student to do bubble-in tests with regard to reading and language, I'm not sure that what you're really testing is language. So I think if you add another level, which has to do with it being a second language, I'm not sure that the test is real accurate about what their learning was.
Okay. And I guess there's value for EL students to attend summer school to maintain skills that
Absolutely.
They've already been working on.
Absolutely.
Three EL aides, I believe, from that one slide for 412 EL students. They must be running around like crazy.
Well, the EL students aren't all in EL classes.
Okay.
The EL students are a lot of times in intervention classes, and they might be in intervention in math or in English language arts.
And there would be an EL aide in?
No.
Oh. Fine.
Because they weren't identified as EL.
Okay.
They were identified as students needing math or English.
And that's part of what you referred
that's
to
the
a moment
whole profile
ago about
thing,
trying
yeah.
to get a better handle on that
yeah.
for next year. And
it's possible that language may not be as much of a barrier in that class.
In math, yeah.
Likewise, if a student is near transitioning into the regular program, although he may still be identified EL, the teacher may be looking at him being in a regular intervention program during the summer as his kind of get his feet wet in a regular class without as much EL umbrella on it as a way of helping him make that transition. So as Melissa mentioned, there were some cases where we didn't have as much information as we would have liked, and we're getting a handle on how to make the new software work. So all of that will work better next summer. But by and large, the teachers that had the students all year long gave us good information on where to place them. And again, it's just a matter of trying to help students make that leap. And Dr. Matakovich shared with me some literature from Johns Hopkins showing how, you know, that very issue of summer backslide is such a huge factor. And if students have the opportunity for some enriching activity during the summer, it can put them in a much better place to be at the same place where they left off in June come September, rather than to be 4 months behind and spend September, October, November getting back to where they were in June. So even though the EL test results or the language arts test results may not be sterling, I think a lot of kids spend a lot of time in reading language arts that will, over the long run, benefit them. The other thing that we like to emphasize to parents is summer school is not a one-time fix. It's only, you know, 5 weeks long. It's a multi-year kind of fix. We were really fortunate. We had some excellent teachers this last summer. You know, a lot of times we're picking people that are somewhat new to the teaching profession, but boy, I tell you, they came with enthusiasm that'll just make the hair stand up on the back of your neck, because they're just in there 100%. So we really delivered a lot of excellent program. We will be working on better, closer, prescriptive programs for our EL students in the coming years.
Great, thank you. One last question. The Pacheco classes, are any of those classes dual immersion, or do you just place class summer school classes at the Pacheco site? And
both Pacheco and Hawthorne ran programs for students that were regular attenders at their school site. The Hawthorne program focused primarily on their EL learners, to try and bring them in and give them extra help. The Pacheco program had kind of three prongs, if you will. One was what we call kindergarten boot camp, which was a chance to experience what would be expected in kindergarten. And again, having observed in that class, it's amazing what it takes to have five-year-olds understand what you do to eat lunch. It's not as simple as you would think. I certainly learned that, especially if you're doing it in two languages. Yeah. Then they also offered English enhancement for EL students, and they offered Spanish enhancement for English speakers.
Excellent, thank you.
And then Adrian?
I'm just wondering if you might
to explore some different assessment tools.
Okay. I think it would too.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds great.
And we did send that profile information back to the home school. So the summer school teachers filled out a profile for every student indicating their progress as of the end of summer school, so that the August 28th teacher would be able to have a kind of a running start.
I just wanted to say, you know, thank you very much, Melissa, for the stewardship provided for this summer school very much, and Greg, for your continued work with that. I had a question, excuse me. What is the direction in terms of goal setting and comparison from one summer school program to the next, transitioning from regular school to summer school to the next school year, the at-risk student? Is there some identification going on, planning going on, to continue to improve, to identify areas of concern, whether they be the EL student class size, results from testing, better assessments? Tell me a little bit about projecting into the future.
Sure. Well, I think what Melissa's already identified is that very issue of us having a better handle. With our new data processing service this last summer, we were really at the 11th hour putting classes together, because that was when we were able to get the information all crunched through the new system. And so we will be doing that much earlier this coming year. And as Melissa has already mentioned, we will be putting a greater emphasis on making sure that we have
at the end of at this time next year, to see what has grown, to see the connection from the year before, to see what has improved and what directions are being taken, I think would be helpful to see the continuation of this wonderful program and what it provides the students.
And believe me, I've had to work with Melissa's enthusiasm, because after having done it once, she's on it for next summer already, and she calls me frequently with ideas for how we can make it better than last time. So, you know, that's our intent, is to have that kind of leadership and to have that kind of enthusiasm, and we have it now.
Yeah, but thank you again, and we'll look forward to seeing that continue and how it progresses. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Just as a postscript, I want to applaud the administration for selecting Melissa Newman, who brings her well-honed skills from Pacific Beach and put them to good use during summer, during the summer school with those students. Now, that's an excellent choice. And as far as Greg Halfman goes, the veteran, the old pro, talk to any adult school teacher and how much they love working with him and admire him. So good choice. We just need a couple more teachers at the secondary level for summer school to get those class sizes down.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate that. We'll move on then to another popular subject is the status of the state budget.
Thank you. And once again, the status of the state budget is that there's no status of the state budget. It's an interesting three meetings now since they passed this latest budget. And in those meetings, their sum total of progress has been to discuss the current political landscape as concerning the upcoming election. They have decided, though, that they will defer any discussion of our budget crisis until after the November 4th elections so that they can take advantage of whatever cover their non-election might give them when they make the decisions that they have to make. Clearly, they recognize that there's going to be some very tough decisions, very painful ones, and ones that will impact education absolutely in the upcoming several years, actually. There's a $3 billion shortfall right now with our current year's budget, and we're only in a third month of that particular fiscal year. So the projections, you know, are very conservative in terms of a $3 billion shortfall. And I think that if you look at the economic outlook for the next several months, next several years, the economy is not going to provide a very healthy job market. It's not going to provide a very healthy income tax market for either the feds or the state. Sales taxes will be down if people don't have disposable income to spend on those ticket items that produce large amounts of sales tax, such as automobiles, refrigerators, large appliances. And then clearly the issue that will impact San Luis Coastal most directly is the real estate market. And there won't be the aspect of selling existing homes to new buyers at a higher price than that which is currently carried on the tax rolls. Outcomes of the lack of leadership and progress that we see in Sacramento is the certainty that when it comes time to make their cuts, education is going to suffer mid-year cuts for the 08-09 school year. That when the governor delivers his January address stating what his budget objectives are for 09-10, we can anticipate that there will be significant, I don't think they're going to be small, I don't think they're going to be token cuts, I think they're going to be significant cuts. And as we just saw here with the summer school presentation, we serve almost 1,200 kids within our summer school program. The money that we utilize to fund summer school comes from a state program. It's an hourly program, is what it's known as. And that funding, because it hasn't been spent, by the time they go to cut it, they're going to cut it. That's going to be one of the programs that people are putting their money on that will suffer some sort of a reduction in revenues. So where we are getting $5.12 an hour per student for service in summer school, we will be reduced or eliminated that funding. Our after-school enrichment programs, our intervention programs for after-school, all of those programs, which are add-ons and very beneficial to the at-risk population, are almost certainly going to see some sort of a reduction in funding level. We begin to also understand that the school site money that we get categorically, that they spend upon their own local populations, will be at risk. And I don't think that any revenue limit district is going on the basis that the state can't solve its fiscal crisis.
I think Walt.
Russell, this may be too tangential, but I'll ask it anyway. What, if anything, would Prop 11 do as far as relieving the budget impasses year after year?
And tell me what Prop 11 is.
That's the redistricting commission.
Ah, you know what it does, actually, is it puts a lot of pressure on, if the redistricting is done in a manner that doesn't gerrymander the districts for the guaranteed reelection of the sitting legislator, It almost certainly will change the outlook of that politician and his ability to do his job, or his outlook on how he should do his job. At this time, I don't know what the statistic is, but in the last 2 years, I would be surprised if more than one legislator had lost his seat in an election to a member of the other party. It just doesn't happen anymore. And because his seat is virtually guaranteed, there's absolutely no incentive for him to, or him or her, to do the type of work necessary to move the state forward with difficult decisions. In a time of where there's no critical issues, it's pretty easy. Sit back, do your job, everybody's happy, that's okay. When you have a critical decision to make, it's very tough to make. We've been faced with those over the last 5 years. The school board has sat down and actually worked its way through very painful decisions. We do it at a local level. Why can't they do it at a state level? Well, they don't need to. They don't have to. Somehow the state is cobbled together every year with bonds, loans, fictitious types of expenditures and revenues that never come to pass. You know, nobody holds them accountable because...
That we need to change the way the districts are done in the state of California. Proposition 11 has already been compromised by eliminating the congressional districts, and is also compromised because it starts with a political process where the governor appoints somebody who then appoints people who then appoint people. And so I think there's a strong agreement in the state to change the way we do the districting, but there's also a lot of agreement that Prop 11 is probably not going to accomplish that.
Russell, what's the schedule, the calendar look like for receiving any information from the state on mid-year cuts?
You know, there's not going to be the big five, those people who get together and at this point make many of the decisions for the state budget. They've determined that there's no need to meet until after the election. Once they meet after the election, then it would be the expectation that they're going to strategize about how to handle the crisis in 08-09's fiscal year, and then how to move forward in 09-10. We're not talking about a $3 billion deficit that's going to, well, it's not going to remain at $3 million. It's going to grow. Once it grows, they have eliminated all of the opportunities in the last 3 years of trying to manage the crisis. They've eliminated the opportunities for borrowing and creating revenues and looking at different aspects of fictitious revenues. We're down to where it's going to have the rubber hit the road, so to speak, and they're going to have to come up with some tough decisions. I don't know that they are going to have the political willpower to do so, but for the state to continue to move in resources in order to put together a spending program. Absent any leadership from the state, we have to make our best decisions. And if we make one miscalculation somewhere along the line, we don't have an opportunity to fix that problem. We have to suffer through it until the next opportunity to do a budget, which would be in July of 2009. And so, the lack of leadership will end up paralyzing different levels of government different ways, but ultimately it's a matter of not having resources to provide services. And then what is your timing and your ability to eliminate some of those expenditures, and what do you eliminate first? There isn't a whole lot of things left to eliminate anywhere within the city, county, local education agencies, any aspect of local government.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Miller? Okay. Thank you very much, Russell,
Thank you, as always.
Next, we're going into the action discussion area of the agenda. And the first item, number four, is the board's review provided by Will Jones, the principal of San Luis Obispo High School, regarding the high school's Western Association of Schools College's midterm progress report. Mr. Jones, thank you.
With you tonight. As an aside, I just want to say that I'm a really happy principal tonight. The school year is getting off to a great start at San Luis Obispo High School. I had a conversation with an assistant superintendent at a school district in Michigan. Degrees in raining, and I kind of gave him a weather report. And I was driving out here tonight and thinking about when I first started working in the district in the 80s, I drove from San Luis to Los Osos Middle School where I first worked, and would think about the school day and think about my good fortune to be able to live and work in this area and to work in the school district and to work with great school boards, great district administrators, teachers, and now as an administrator for the last 10 years, which is hard for me to believe, almost 11. With great site administrators. And driving out here, I was the sun's going down and the sky's changing from red and orange to light blue and dark blue, and the stars are coming out over Hollister Peak. And I'm just thinking to myself, what a fortunate man I am, what a fortunate educator I am to be in this district. And I can't, sometimes we look at the glasses half empty or half full. Yeah, I really think for those of us that work in this district and live here that, you know, our glass is running over despite the challenges that we have. So I just want to thank everyone for your support, not just for San Luis Obispo High School, but for all the schools, and to the teachers and other administrators, all the great work that we all do. I think it's a remarkable place to live and work. And today I'm just particularly appreciative of that, so I wanted to share that with you. And, you know, finally, I'm happy because my beloved Philadelphia Phillies are in the World Series starting tomorrow night. So there you go. Starting off on a positive note, our WASC midterm report is a part of the process of going through the accreditation to people from WASC to spend a day at our school and to review the report with us. And typically that happens in the spring of the third year, but in communication with the chair of that two-person committee over the summer, we talked about the fact that we had enough data, I felt, available from the first 2 years, 2006 and 2007, and then incoming data from 2008, that we could put together a representative report of the progress we've made in the last 2.5 years, really. And so they agreed to have the visit in November, and so we will have a one-day visit from a two-person team on November 17th. That's a Monday, and we're looking forward to that. The midterm report is more focused on achievement data than it is on a full-blown view of the school with all of the extracurricular activities, all the social, emotional elements of the school. And it also is not a creation of new goals necessarily, although there may be some new action steps. So what you see in front of you is primarily an accumulation of achievement data over the last 2.5 years. And I'll just spend a minute or two pointing out a couple of things I think that are relevant that have happened in the last couple of years or even in the last few years, and then answer any questions that you might have. On page 4.5, we have a students by ethnicity table, and it only shows the students for 2007 and 2008, but I think it's important to point out, for instance, if you look at the percentage of students who identify as Hispanic at 15.8%, that number has increased in this decade at San Luis Obispo High School as well. So we have a significant change in demographics at our school, which I think in a lot of ways is a positive. We have more diversity at our school, and I think that makes us a more interesting and more culturally kind of compelling school as well. But it also comes along with some challenges. So we're kind of happy that with those changes that have occurred, we are seeing the kind of academic progress that we've been hoping for and continue to hope for. If you turn over to page 4.9, I suppose the easiest data to look at, which represents some growth, would be in our API score over the last 3 years. And I'm proud to be able to say that and happy to be able to say that we've seen improvement for all of our statistically significant subpopulations as well as for all students. You can see we've moved from an API of 790 for all students to 818 for this year of 2008, and we're happy to break through that 800 barrier that we've been hoping to break through for a few years now. And you can see that each subgroup has also improved, and particularly in the last 2 years, to see the improvement for our Hispanic Latino students, students and for our economically disadvantaged students to go from 641 to 695 and 636 to 713. I think that speaks a lot about the efforts we're making to work with our students who sometimes struggle to be successful in school for many reasons that contribute to that struggle. If you take a look over on, I'm going to jump way ahead up to page 4.21, if you look in the areas of student support and professional development and academic improvement staff, which has brought down our student to counselor ratio from over 500 to 1 to 300 to 1, that may not be in that paragraph, but it is in the report someplace. And that's really allowed us to have, I think, much more personal connections between our counselors and our students, particularly in teaming with teachers and deans and other and administrators to support the students who are struggling. We're also putting a lot of intensive effort into helping with the success of our EL students, and we have a goal that we've added to our school plan this year for that purpose. And we this year have a really dynamic approach, team approach to working with our EL students, an EL team that includes counselors, our EL aide, one of our deans, and other administrators and teachers that are supporting those students. I think the professional learning community concept that we've introduced into our district for professional development has blended kind of beautifully with the other things that we've been doing over the years to for academic improvement. And you can see at the bottom of the page the things that we've been doing briefly, identifying essential standards and working on developing assessments and administering our standardized tests, development of standards-based instructional calendars, development of SMART goals, more collaboration over results that we get back from our tests, and a very keen awareness of what the needs of our subpopulations are. So I think that the PLC concept is blending beautifully with that, and I think our focus on use of our TCT on Mondays for collaboration and improving student achievement is really going to help. I think the results in general kind of speak for themselves that we are seeing a lot more success for those students, and we're excited about that. We think some of the things we're doing are really working, and we plan to continue doing those things and also add, we'll be adding the AVID class next year. We have a cohort coming over from Laguna who started there last year as seventh graders. Now they're in eighth grade. We'll be starting using that as our core group, plus adding to those students from the current eighth grade. We're going to look for other candidates in the eighth grade and also look at our ninth grade students to see if we can have two sections of AVID for next year to get that program started. So I said at the beginning that I'm a happy principal. I think we have a lot of reasons to be happy at San Luis Obispo High School. We have a lot of challenges still ahead of us. We want to continue to show improvement for all students at our school. We have some programs that we'd like to see. We are a little bit puzzled about that aren't as successful as others. We've been looking hard at our math program to see if we can improve some results there. There are some contradictory results that are a little bit puzzling. But in any case, we're working hard, and we'll continue to do so to help with continued improvement for all students at SLO High. So if
thank
there are
you.
Any
thank
questions,
you
be happy
much,
to.
We'll, yeah, there are some questions. We'll start with Chris and then Mark.
Yeah, and Will, this is great, and I really appreciate all the facts and figures and things like that. Just a couple of things that jumped out at me were, one, as I looked through it, reminding people of the differences in algebra, and the later people take algebra, the worse they tend to do. Not that that's a fault of San Luis Obispo High School. My political comment on that is I think this just shows the folly of requiring eighth graders to the CASI between the different subgroups. And it's looking good. We're getting kids passing. We're getting some pretty high pass rates. But the differences in the scores among the pass rates, I think, is something that I think you guys are probably looking at, and I would encourage you to continue to do that as well. Thank you.
Mark? And then Adrian and Catherine.
Catherine's recording.
Thank you. This was great, and I know that getting a WASC accreditation, you can get various levels of accreditation, and 6 is the highest you can get, so that's a compliment right there. It's a tremendous compliment to the school. I had a question about the math concerns. In the paragraph, it ends with that the goal for the department is to improve scores. I'm on 4.20. To improve scores to meet the county mean scaled score. And unfortunately, my terminology, is that you're hoping to meet the county average?
Well, that's a beginning goal for us. That's not the end goal, but I think if we're talking about an immediate or short-term goal, right now our scores in math are not at the equal to a mean scale score for each subject, are not at the level of the county on average. So I think as a short-term goal, that's what we'd like to achieve. We want to go beyond that, but that's a beginning.
Okay. And if I can, just a second question. As I look through the goals at the end, goals 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and ending with 6, since you noted that math was a concern, I was kind of interested to know why math isn't a goal that you called out.
Right. The goals that we can't always anticipate what maybe your needs might be down the road a little bit. So we have within the a goal that refers to, and I think if you go back to look at continue alignment of curriculum with state standards to ensure that all students will demonstrate proficiency in the essential standards in all content areas, even though we don't have anything specific to math right in there. But that's the area in which we'd be looking at the various things we can do to improve our math scores. And we've done a lot of work. We continue to. We have a consultant actually coming down from Santa Cruz County Office of Education at the end of the month, who's going to be spending a couple of days working with our math team, doing some observations, looking at instructional strategies, helping us to take a look at our data maybe from a different set of eyes, someone who is an expert in math. So those are things that you don't see spelled out in here, but are kind of going on anyway.
Catherine and then Adrian.
Thanks, Will. This is a great report. Thanks for spending so much time on it. Very exciting about the AVID programs and the two classes you're going to offer next year, and especially because it sounds like that will help support these socially economically disadvantaged students as well as EL learners. Is that correct? It's for both groups?
Well, it's a little complex. It can certainly help any student at San Luis Obispo High School. There are some criteria for the students who participate in AVID, but without going into a lot of detail, any student, regardless of what category they might be in, can participate in the AVID class. So, typically it's for students who are in the basic to high basic or proficient area, at least in their START testing, and who have relatively good Hispanic Latino students who may have been first generation college students in San Diego, which is where AVID came from. So I think we can stretch that criteria a little bit. We want to give the opportunity for that kind of support to as many students as we can. So we'll kind of work within the traditional criteria, plus look for other candidates who might not on paper have those same numbers that traditionally they look for, but who might still have the motivation and potential to be successful in AVID. So that's our goal. That's our plan.
Just one more question, if I may, about the math program. You mentioned that you're in communication with the Michigan schools that are on the trimester
right.
system, and I'm wondering if they've indicated to you that the trimester system negatively impacts their math scores.
On the contrary, the data that I've looked at from Michigan, and one of the reasons why they are continuously adding more and more schools to they're going to the trimester, they just feel like they're having a lot more success. But they do things differently in Michigan. They don't give annual tests at all grade levels in high school. They have an exit test, which isn't necessarily required. There's no criteria for passing in order to get a diploma. But at the end of the 11th grade, all their high school students take the ACT tests in the core areas, which are the tests that students take for entrance into college. So they don't test in 9th grade and 10th grade, but they prepare their students for the ACT in 11th grade. And they're finding that the results they're getting in 11th grade are quite good. And so they feel like the trimester is working for them in that respect. Plus giving them the other kind of traditional benefits that the trimester gives for choice and electives and so forth. Yeah.
Thank you.
Adrian.
question. But I think one of the assessments of a high school is how well the students do and what they do do, and do they take heart and spirit away from the school? And Roland, for instance, you know, went on to teach migrant kids at Patterson High School and improved their AP scores by 100%. The number of kids that passed AP by 100%, and then went to teach in Durham, North Carolina, with mostly African-American kids, and then went to Lake Oswego, which is affluent. And this is bragging now, but he, in his first year, the seniors picked him out as the best teacher, along with another gentleman. So
it must have been all those tears I shed in the AP class when he was a senior.
Well, you know, it's all part of it, though. You know, that, you know, his favorite book, of course, this was probably Avery's class, was Grapes of Wrath. But they learn a lot in high school. I mean, it's a place where they start developing some of their attitudes and what's important and things like that, that I think are important to remember in the way you assess an educational institution. Of course, he went to Pomona College. He had a lot of other factors, like you say. But I want to thank you for, you know, your contributions in all those ways to the students at San Luis Obispo High School.
Thank you. Just an anecdote, we have 12 students right now, along with two of our ag teachers who are in Indianapolis at the National FFA Convention, and they're competing for national championships. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that you don't see in a report like this that are going on that are so enriching for students, and we're proud of those students and their teachers.
And you never need to apologize when you compliment your children. And Walt?
Thank you. Will, I just want to echo what Mark said, because I was...
Well, we've been fortunate in the last few years to have some categorical funds come to us from a variety of directions, and with those funds, plus being judicious about how we use our general fund money, we have been able to do some things to support students. It remains to be seen. I think that the money that right now that we spend on tutoring, some of that comes from categorical money that we receive. So I hire tutors from Cal Poly to come in and work with our students after school to work in our kind of general tutorial program. We also have students who come in specifically to help out, and not just students, but others who come in to help out with our math lab. So there might be some risk for being able to continue to fund programs like that. Some of the things that we're doing, AVID's going to be funded by the school district, which is great. That's in the strategic plan. But also the study skills program we have that we think has been very successful, that we carved out of the section allocations that were allocated each year. So we made a sacrifice in some areas in order to be able to have six sections of study skills. By that I mean two classes of study skills each trimester for the whole year, so the students are in that class all year. Those shouldn't be endangered unless somehow the fiscal situation in the district meant that we were cutting back on the sections that were allocated year to year. I don't expect that would happen, but it's really hard to say, well, what's going to happen there. We'll have to wait and see.
And then just kind of a follow-up, what do you think that the economic situation will do to your economically disadvantaged student numbers?
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive. You know, the economy has been at least decent for the last decade. It did demographically. It looked like in 2000. By 2020, we're going to be a completely different school. We may be a completely different school district by then. So I think those numbers are going to continue to go up. Personally, I don't know where people who don't have economic means are, how they can live in our community. So it's a bit baffling how that percentage of students is going up. But that's the reality. And so I would expect that trend to continue, and particularly given the current situation.
Marilyn?
Thank you, Will. Thanks. This is a great report, as other people have said, and thank you for...
Thank you.
For providing it for us. I too, you know, I was shocked by the 22% socioeconomically disadvantaged number. I mean, it startled me. I don't know what the percentage is at Morro Bay High School. We've got Pete Sotovich here, but Pete, is that more or less? Not as many. And we have fewer students at Morro Bay as well. So some of the little notations that I made here, study skills classes and AVID. And then I applaud you here, this 10th grade counseling program where the counselors meet with every 10th grade student and his or her parents midway through the 10th grade to review the student's progress and four-year plan. Underlined, the students also meet with the Career and College Guidance Center coordinator to become more familiar with the resources available in that area. And would I interpret that to mean that they would be provided information about career technical education too at that time if that were a student's bent?
It's all in concert with their four-year plan, so having a knowledge of what is the key to that. We have that in front of us all throughout the 4 years they're in school, so the counselors are constantly talking to students about adjustments that they want to make. Not surprisingly, 80% of the students who come to San Luis Obispo High School say that they, when they graduate, they want to attend either a UC or a CSU. 80% do not attend a CSU or a UC, more like about 28%. So there's a big adjustment that goes on. Many of those students choose to move on to Cuesta or to look pursue other opportunities. So this 10th grade program we have found to be absolutely invaluable, and the parents think it's great. It gives the counselors that opportunity and the parents to make some adjustments. And it's very labor intensive. Much of it happens after school hours. We have our counselors who are there late. It takes a lot to set up all the appointments, and we don't let anybody, if they've missed an appointment, we call back and set it up and have them come back in. And it just provides, again, that kind of personal service to each student and their parents that I think is yielding great benefits for us.
It really sounds worthwhile to me. Then when I got to the bottom of the page, I got confused. It says, planning for academic improvement is fully embedded in the school culture, beginning with standards-based curriculum in all areas and including assessment-based development and administration, development of standards-based instructional calendars, development of SMART goals, assessment data analysis, awareness of subpopulation results, regular collaboration, and celebration of success, which I circled and put exclamation points around because I was thought, geez, we're celebrating teachers' success. I hear so much, you know, about this or that or the other thing. Let's celebrate their success. No, wait a minute, we're talking about kids. So then I thought, okay, it could...
Well, you need to take time to stop and celebrate then. So, you know, 4 weeks ago I had all my hair shaved off and all my head. I had my head shaved.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yes. I'll stop right there. But we got to have some fun. We start every staff meeting. The first thing we do with every staff meeting is we celebrate success. What's happening out there that we want to talk about and celebrate? And if we can't do that, then, I think it's that old glass half full, half empty. We just think that we have great things going on, and students and teachers need recognition for that.
That's a great attitude. Thank you, Will.
That's a good point, Marilyn, too. So next year you're aiming towards the full bikini wax. I understand. I wanted to suggest to the board that we create a motion tonight and a second. It calls for the board's approval of this, and I think the tremendous amount of work with the original accreditation and the continued work to achieve the goals that were set out and what's represented in this report. So I would ask that someone on the board fashion a motion regarding the approval of this with a second.
I would move that we accept the midterm WASC report from San Luis Obispo High School.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger, by Chris, and a second by Mark, Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that.
We're going to go on now to the item number 5, a discussion item. Approval of the K-12 single plans for student achievement. Ms. Delkiskamp, please. Thank you.
Good evening. Because our schools receive state and federal funding, their school plans must be approved by you, our Board of Education. And the process that leads to the development of each school plan, principal of Del Mar Elementary, Diane Frost, principal of Los Osos Middle School, and Karen Lopez, principal of Pacific Beach High School, are here to share their school plans with you. K-12
Good evening. I'm Janet Gould, principal of Delmar Elementary, and while I might not know very much about gym lights, I do know a lot about our single plan for student achievement, and I'm going to briefly share it with you this evening. Our school plan has four goals, and the goals are for reading, math, writing, and school climate. However, within each and every one of these goals, we have specific action steps that address the needs of our EL, special education, and socioeconomically disadvantaged students. In our first goal of reading, our students definitely are making progress in reading, and the bulleted items are quite a few different activities and interventions that we have to help make this a reality. Perhaps at the top of our list is our guided process reading, where students meet for 30 minutes a day, four times a week, in homogeneous small groups reading at their instructional level. So it gives them a chance to read with a teacher or a trained paraprofessional at their instructional level every day. One of the challenges that we've faced in the past is with the number of interventions that we have and the amount of pull-out time that this was taking from the classrooms for all the different interventions. So we started looking at what other schools were doing and reading about what other schools are doing. And this year we developed a system called Walk to Learn, which is a half an hour for each grade level a day where students literally walk to what they need to learn. So if they need assistance in fluency, they go to our fluency lab. If they need improvement in math. And for instance, in our Walk to Learn this year with math, students in the third through sixth grade who need additional intervention in math have a half an hour a day where they can work with a teacher and review concepts that they're currently working on in their classroom. The other nice thing about Walk to Learn is it's also a time for acceleration. So even with reading, students who are reading at and above grade level are having chances to do literature circles. We have a group that's reading science books and extending their science knowledge. We have a group that's studying and reading about the election process. And in math, we have a third grade group who is an accelerated math group who are working on more problem solving and strategies to extend what they're working on in their classroom. And our third goal of writing, one of the things that we are focusing on this year is both our Title I and EL teachers are pushing into our upper grade classrooms for writing assistance, which allows another adult to do one-on-one writing conferences with students. With our fourth through sixth grade EL students who are already at a level three or four, these are fluent English speakers, some of them even proficient advanced in reading, definitely good fluent reading skills, but we're not seeing the same proficiency level in writing. So we're focusing with our fourth, fifth, and sixth grade students on some additional writing and able to do that through the Walk to Learn time. Finally, we all know that healthy, happy students are better prepared to be successful students, and our fourth goal addresses the school climate, and we have lots of great activities and fun things for students to do to help make Del Mar a great place for students. If I could focus community a better place, just last week, about eight of our Estero Bay community members went to the Morro Bay City Council after a process where they've spoken to the mayor, they've gone to the Recs and Parks Commission, and the Morro Bay City Council actually had on their agenda to try and pass a smoke-free parks ordinance in Morro Bay, and they got up there and talked to the board as to why that ordinance should be approved. And even though they were voted down 3-2, we were still very proud of our students, and a husband and wife that had seen that on TV got in touch with the school and said, you know, I'm so impressed with your students, we want to celebrate them. So they're hosting a pizza party for our students as an appreciation. Our students through the Estero Bay Youth Coalition are also looking at upcoming toy and food drives for the holiday season, as well as they're interested in being involved in the talk that's in our area about building a community pool here in Morro Bay. So these are all activities through the Estero Bay Youth Coalition that are giving our students chances for meaningful participation in their school and in their community. And finally, tying it all together, what makes it all work? We definitely have very highly skilled teachers and paraprofessionals at Del Mar. We believe the Monday morning collaboration time has been a great way for us to look at our systematic approach to interventions and to accelerations and how do we meet the needs of our students. We have a very interested and involved PTA, School Site Council, and our English Language Advisory Committee. We had our first ELAC meeting a couple weeks ago. We had over 47 Hispanic Hispanic parents come to the meeting to see the different interventions and to provide input into our school. So that's fantastic. And the district, state, and federal fundings, much of what I spoke about here tonight couldn't be done.
Any questions right now? Sure, Walt. Thank you very much.
You used the term, Janet, in discussing guided process reading of homogeneous.
Homogeneous, what is that? Is the groups are all reading, are all similar.
Okay. And then I want to acknowledge what you just said about the involvement of your students in the schools, because when we went through the Healthy Kids survey and we're looking at assets, it's surprising that elementary grades didn't have sometimes very high numbers where the students felt like they were had a significant involvement in their schools. So I applaud that effort.
Thank you.
Thank you, Walt. Thank you very much, Janet, for that. Diane, thank you.
Hi, I'm Diane Frost. I'm from Los Osos Middle School, and I represent the middle school version of single plans for student achievement. Like Mrs. Gould said, we bring together school site councils that have teachers, parents, and at the middle level, students who help define our goals. And we also include our faculty. Teachers have a huge voice in what goals you see written up here. Our first goal actually looks at proficiency levels with our students. So we're looking at the California Standards Test. Each of our departments looks at the results that they get. They look at results from their previous year students and the students that they currently have, and they try to develop goals for the next year. Our Social Studies and History Department hopes to improve their scores by 5%, and that's after having an increase of 5% last year. So over 2 years, they would show a 10% increase in proficiency levels. Our Science Department has wonderful proficiency, hovering right around 70%. They are actually looking at specific classes this year. Our Algebra 1, we have 7th graders and 8th graders who take Algebra 1. We hope that our 7th graders will go from 75 to 80% proficiency, and that our 8th graders will go from 44 to 49% proficiency. You will see a difference there. There is no doubt our 7th grade from 75 to 80 and our 8th grade from 44 to 49, but you're looking at a system where we are putting more 8th graders into this 8th grade Algebra 1 class, and every year we hope that we get a higher and higher level of proficiency. General math, we hope we'll go from 47 to 51. 7th grade English from 59 to 60. I can't see it that far, to 63, and then the final one, 8th grade English from 58 to 62. If you look at the next slide, you'll see, and I'm not going to go over these, that was our broad goal. We have a number of action items to support these. All of our far below basic and below basic students will meet with their counselors and their parents to set goals, look at remediations, what can we do for these students, reading skills class, professional development that targets motivating some of our unmotivated students. But the one thing on there that I really want to call your attention to is the Math Connections course. We added last year and continued this year what we call a Math Connections course. So our 7th graders who struggled the most with pre-algebra concepts, and they showed that to us in their CST scores and in also in the grades that they earned, they are given a companion course to go along with their Algebra Course 1. So they're moved forward to Algebra Course 1, and they take a companion course with it. It's got reduced number of students in there. This year it's a 20-to-1 ratio. They are getting pre-taught, so front-loading of the material. They're also working, yes, it's taken in lieu of an elective. The teacher who teaches it is very, very aware of that, that they have given up their elective to participate in this course. These students, during the course of the week, are absolutely working on remedial skills, and they're getting the information front-loaded. They have an opportunity to work on the homework that will be due in their Algebra Course 1 class, and then they have the motivation piece. There are game days. She works on activities with them, so they also are experiencing some of the things that our other kids are experiencing in the more traditional elective. But it is a choice. They have to give up their elective to participate. And I will tell you, when some of our students earn the opportunity to be out of that class, they don't always take that opportunity. They choose to stay in.
So
Is it a mandatory class to go along with the algebra, or is it an elective that goes along with the algebra?
Well, it's just about, it's a highly recommended class. These are students who did very, very poorly in seventh grade, and I will say our parents have been very supportive. They see their students struggling in math. They want them to be successful, and they see this as one way that they can be successful. And truly, we do promote it, saying, if you are passing that Algebra Course 1 class, you choose the elective. We will help you get into an elective at the semester. Many of them feel the motivation piece, see the success in their Algebra Course 1, and they have not had success in math in the past, and they are very happy with their placement there.
Thanks.
Our next goal looks at English language learners. It says the percentage of English language learners subgroup proficiency on the old score, the whole number they get in math and English, by 5%. We have a number of action items here, and I've spoken about a couple of these before with you. As Mrs. Gould says, we have ELAC meetings that are very well attended. She said she had 47 parents. We had about 40 people at our last meeting also, and I think a lot of that has to do with a very dynamic and committed bilingual aide and EL teacher. Our bilingual aide makes phone calls, talks to the parents, makes them comfortable with the campus, helps them see the need to come to the meeting. At the meeting, we give them an awful lot of information. The first bullet there I want to highlight, we have a wonderful bilingual homework club, in part funded by the funds that Russell was talking about earlier, state remediation funds. We have between 15 and 25 English learners come on Mondays, and we have about 38 kids in our program. So that is a very, very high number. Our bilingual aide is in there. I also have a credentialed English teacher in there. And recently I've had a retired bilingual teacher come by to help out. So we have an awful lot of support for them after school. The next one looks at special education students on our campus, and we're basically looking at their individual improvement. So hoping that they can improve their own scores, not judged against anybody else, but judged against themselves. Can they do better this year on their math and English CSTs? A couple of action items that support this. As we've talked about before, Los Osos Middle School looks at the RTI model. That's the response to intervention. How do we provide early remediations for our students? Which is exactly, really have a voice in exactly what the action items are. What will help them be successful in school? Our next goal, and you've heard a little bit about this one. This is character and drug education will be provided to LOAM students, and campus climate and overall student health and safety will be enhanced by looking at California Healthy Kids and providing other surveys for our students. The last time I was with you, I talked a little bit about the California Healthy Kids survey, and you saw a list of action items that we will be implementing at Los Osos Middle School. These are a few other things that add to the California Healthy Kids piece. We have an amazing conflict manager program at our school, a very diverse positive recognition program, and really are looking at our interdisciplinary and thematic units that we offer our kids. We really look at it as a motivation piece. How can we get the kids involved in the learning? You'll see pictures there of our engineering day. We also have a very popular rendezvous day, and this year are offering in the spring kind of a science-themed day for our seventh graders. And then our final goal, and I won't read this whole thing, at Los Osos Middle School, and this is really a couple of teachers on our school site council who looked at this and talked about it, and based on the conversations with our staff, we want to acknowledge that kids are gifted in areas other than academic. So this goal looks at not only our academically accelerated students, but our musically talented, our artistically talented, and our athletically talented students, and making sure that we honor those areas of giftedness too. WALS program, we have diverse intramurals and clubs, and an amazing after-school sports program. Now, we've had a great basketball program, but just recently, in the last couple of years, we've added intramurals, cross-country, track and field, and volleyball for both boys and girls that have been very well attended. I hope you'll see that these are a very, very comprehensive look at the program that we offer our students. We look at social, we look at emotional, and we look at the academic needs of our middle school students. At this time, I'd like to introduce Karen Lopez, who will talk about high school.
Diane, thank you very much.
At the high school level, we also include community members, parents, students, and staff members and teachers when we put together the single plan for student achievement. So it's very similar that as the middle school, we bring in the students at that level as well. We at Pacific Beach High School, we looked at our WASC report from last spring. We looked at data from Healthy Kids Survey. We looked at CASI data. And three major pieces kind of bubbled to the top. Because of the nature of our site, we look at all students very, very individually that come to our site. But the two areas that we're seeing some increase numbers in are the students that are struggling with CASI and the students that are classified as EL or recently reclassified as RFEP. So the two main goals target those groups of students, and the first one being the CASI score. So if we went back again annually, we are looking very closely at not them as a group, but each one of them individually, and what kind of resources can we bring in and kind of intervention strategies can we bring in that targets each one of them individually with the needs that they have in relationship to CASI and other academic needs. It falls over, even though it kind of targets the CASI exam, it falls into their other academic needs as well in terms of identifying their gaps along the way and what kind of an individual intervention program needs to be developed for each one of them. The second goal targets the EL students, both in their CASI scores and in earning credits towards graduation. Very similarly to what we spoke to with CASI, again, targeting them individually, not as a group, but what kind of support, software support, resource support can we bring in and work with them to identify their gaps and what they need individually to be brought forward. In addition to that, we are joining a PLC with students with continuation schools and independent study programs across the county and developing PLC groups in English, social science, science, and math. So our teachers, in fact, social science meets tomorrow as the first group to meet. We met all together in August countywide, and each district has committed to at least 2 days for our core groups to meet together. So social science teachers across the county will be meeting tomorrow at Liberty as those groups start. English will meet at our site on December 3rd. So part of that collaboration will be how are you meeting and starting, just getting underway this year, have some hours of an EL aide and some hours of an EL teacher support in each week. And so we're looking at continuing and trying to implement that program as best as it can be implemented to support our EL students and then improving this home-to-school communication. Our last goal is very similar to the ones that you've heard about at the elementary school and the middle school. And being a site of what we call reluctant learners, or what we also use, you hear the term of at-risk students, students that have traditionally not found success in their schooling along the way, this is a key component for us to look at. And it's a key component for the ASAM scores, the alternative scores that are used to compare our sites with the AYPs and APIs also of the other sites, although we have those scores as well. In terms of the students that we receive, how can we help them feel successful? They're bringing sometimes some negative baggage with them, and they don't feel that they can be successful at school, and because they haven't been. So what can we do to help break them through and show them that they can be successful? Our personal learning program, profile program, looks at multiple intelligences, looks at other kinds of assessments, personality assessments, temperament assessments, and to show them, to help them learn who they are. And then those, the staff receives professional development in all of that, and then all of that is also incorporated into the classroom instruction and in assessments. And so the students can start to address, how can I help myself learn? I am smart. Everybody's smart. We just maybe, not surprisingly, we find that our students, as they're assessed in multiple intelligences, those are typically not the highest that we see, and typically are the lowest in terms of the statistics that we're getting with students and the reluctant learners that we receive. So how can we build that positive feeling and the feeling that I can learn so that they are motivated to move forward? And that's what this goal attempts to do as we have implemented that program and continue to do so, as well as the whole student, the drug and alcohol counseling, and some of the other counseling that we can bring on campus and provide for our students. In addition to those things in Goal 3, we also provide some interest-based curriculum and co-curricular opportunities at our small site, and those that we target are in the area of drama, yearbook projection, just moved it into the digital world last year. The career tech education projects that we do, designing the logos and develop and producing the mock trial t-shirts this year, along with economics, they are looking at becoming more green and using solar energy and developing in the process right now of designing their own plan to develop bags that have solar energy panels on them that then can be used and connected to their iPod as they're walking around these farmers markets and places and hiking and places that they might do, and that's connected to economic standards and career technical education pieces. Gardening project with the gardening funds, apple grafting, first aid CPR. We certified students last year in first aid CPR. We also continue with our YSEMP program, Youth Career Exploration and Mentoring Program, which we were the pilot of, about big brothers and big sisters in the community. And Imadinari, our students participate in that as well, the artistic, bringing in some of the artistic pieces and fine arts, and then as well, as you're very aware of, the last one is mock trial. So we have, I think, one more for that. And so we would like to thank you for your continued support of all of our programs in the district, because without that, you know, we wouldn't be successful in reaching the needs of all of our students. So we thank you.
Kara, thank you very much. Rita?
I just wanted to point out that we're very fortunate to have these enthusiastic educational leaders at our sites who are involved earnestly in the process of continuous improvement. And we will bring this item back to you in November for approval, but at this time, we'd invite you to share any input you might have for us.
Okay, thank you very much. Adrian?
Congratulations to all the principals for all your, and to your schools for all that you do. That's so wonderful. I would be so interested in what schools would come up with for their goals if they didn't have these external constraints on them about AYP and, you know, had to give CST and STAR and all these tests. I mean, these are given to you as requirements. And it's like, okay, number one, we got to do this. But when you get down to like goals 3, 4, and 5, then you start seeing what schools are really excited about, and they come up with and create on their own about multiple intelligences and develop areas of giftedness are difficult. And I think schools, you've heard me say this kind of thing before, but it comes out again in goals. So I just want to encourage the schools to enjoy and celebrate all their successes in the goals that really come from them and their own definitions of success in education, and not worry too much about, you know, whether you meet this percent or that in terms of some of these tests and all that. So congratulations on all your good work, and keep the spirit up.
We do have a, you noted we have a combination of different types of goals. We want our goals to be measurable, okay, in some way so that we can measure our progress and then continue to improve. It is within our board policy noted on the agenda item that we are specifically asked to note AYP and scores such as those.
I was wondering for Karen from Pacific Beach and for Diane and Janet from their schools, for Janet and Diane, the collaborative time, how you think that has benefited the goal setting and the development of the direction, number one, and then I wanted to find out from Karen how they work with the other schools that you started to talk about, that you're beginning, how that is directing or how that is benefiting Pacific Beach.
Well, we'll better know an answer to that at the end of the year as the year goes forward.
Is this the first year?
This is the first year. August was the very first time to pull this together.
Okay, that'll be interesting to see how that does benefit things. And then I was curious about the collaborative time at the schools, how you feel that's enhanced, benefited, played into this.
We tried last year to work within kind of our existing structure. I believe I came to the board and talked about something we were able to do for our primary grade teachers through PE and music, kind of work some time in for them, and they felt it was so valuable. This year, having it school-wide every Monday morning where teachers can get together in grade levels or cross grade levels, we found extremely valuable for really working our guided process reading groups. And when we looked at Walk to Learn and placing all of the students in a grade level and different interventions to really meet their needs, and then monitoring, is that meeting their needs, do we need to make some changes? So having that regularly scheduled time is invaluable. It's also been very nice because our English EL teacher is available at that time. Our Title I teacher and our resource teacher are available at that time. And in the past, that was kind of the missing link. So having everyone available at the same time to kind of get on the same page has been extremely valuable. Teachers are talking about what it is we're doing and what it is we're teaching. And I think spending a lot more time planning together and looking at student achievement. And the thing we're noticing teachers say is, you know, it's not even enough time. And it's neat because I think it's starting to build a culture where I do hear more and more of teachers from all the different grade levels that are going above and outside of that time and meeting together every Thursday morning to look at planning for next week and at lunch on Wednesday. So we found it very beneficial.
For both the students and the teachers, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Yes. May I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
Walt. How
100 kids and, you know, be there for them on Monday morning. And we only had about, I think, 15 students who weren't already participating in a program that starts at 7:30 every morning of the week, Monday through Friday, who needed that additional help on Monday morning. So they've been folded in, and we have a program available to them at a very reasonable cost for Monday morning. And, you know, I might have a student who shows up a little early and, oh, I forgot it was Monday morning. But overall, the parents have been really supportive. They understand what we're doing, and they've made arrangements for childcare.
Thank you, Janet. Diane.
I'll just say briefly that Los Osos Middle School has continued to really find value in this year, which is our late start, and last year, which was our early release. And we have been doing it for a couple of years, and we have a nice process together. Our teachers have true opportunity to get together and discuss student needs. We do it at the department level where they can talk about department-related issues, and then we get together in grade level teams where different departments can come together and talk about the issues that we're seeing. We also have a wonderful opportunity for staff development. We will be spending time talking about our English learners. Our staff members have spent TCT time putting together web pages, just a number of things that without this time, teachers would not be able to accomplish.
Thank you very much. Adrian?
You know, I started my teaching career at Del Mar, and I was handed a key. I was hired to teach sixth grade, and here's your key, and there's your classroom, room number 6. And, you know, I was on my own, and I had to think about that when you were giving your presentation of the richness of support.
Thank you. Karen and Diane and Janet, thank you so much for coming tonight and presenting what's happening at your school sites. I think it's remarkable. I think we all agree. And then next month, we'll go ahead and follow up and support it even further. But thank you so much for this. Item number six, Educational Technology Plan 2009 to 2014. And I believe that Emilia Simoes, thank you.
Yes.
Good to see you.
Good evening. Thank you. My name is Emilia Simoes. I'm the Director of Information Services and Technology. And Rita's going to be presenting with me, Director of Instructional Services and Special Projects. So we've been working with this wonderful committee of stakeholders in our district to develop this summary of the goals and objectives of the plan for technology for our district for the next 5 years. And 5 years may seem like a lot. We have an opportunity in 3 years to go through and update the plan. But we'd like to go ahead and create the plan for the next 5 years that's going to guide us and help us articulate our goals and objectives for the next 5 years, as I said, and look at our funding so that we're sure we have adequate funding to support this process. These are the stakeholders that I mentioned that are on the steering committee for our plan, and some of them are here this evening, and we've tried to balance it out with students and teachers, administrative objectives in the primary components that we have here on the slide. Rita's going to talk about curriculum and professional development, then I'll talk about the other two bullets. Okay, Rita.
Before we go any further, I just wanted to take the time to acknowledge the leadership and work of our teacher on special assignment in the area of technology, and that's Eric Jarvis. And Eric couldn't be with us this evening because he has a family commitment, but I just wanted you to know that it's his preparation and his facilitation, along with the enthusiastic and earnest work of our subcommittee members that yielded the curriculum goals and professional development goals that you have in your agenda item. And I wanted to acknowledge Jan Fecho, who is one of our committee members, who has helped us along the way, and invite her participation in this item should she wish to share any information with you. So the first area there, I want you to know that our curriculum goals are aligned to the National Educational Technology Standards for Students and to the state requirements for our Educational Technology Plan. Some of the key concepts that are incorporated are, one is using technology to apply research skills. Also using technology to enhance learning through opportunities to create and to produce. And the third one is using technology to be able to collaborate and to sequence. And in that scope and sequence, what we do is we provide specific learning objectives for four different grade spans so that teachers know the focus points that align to our plan. In addition, our curricular goals for teachers are meant to provide them the opportunity to model technology use for our students, as well as to use technology to support the learning of our students. What we did then was we developed our professional development goals, and they're linked to our curricular goals. So, for example, by integrating technology into their lessons, teachers are modeling for students the technology and research skills that we want our students to acquire. In addition, through their use of web-based gradebook programs and the sharing of best practices, teachers are supporting the concepts of using technology for communication and for collaboration. And then finally, yes, on the next one. the professional development we have for staff in the ethical and legal use of technology provides the support that's needed to ensure that our students are learning and understanding their responsibilities as users of technology.
Okay, so the other subcommittee developed goals as well with benchmarks for all of the hardware and infrastructure that will go into supporting the curricular goals and the professional development and continue to support our business upgrade software and hardware as needed along the way, including the servers and switches and all that infrastructure that underlies our network to provide a safe and secure environment. And the fact that we have the budget in place to do that, we're hoping that that will continue, and we'll be seeking additional funding opportunities as we have all along, and perhaps stepping up our efforts in this area by looking more at grants that might supplement the grade levels that perhaps haven't received the grants in the last few years. We've been fortunate to have a grant recently for our teachers and classrooms in grades 4 through 6. And Eric wrote that grant in instructional services, and our department is supporting the hardware end of it. So part of the grant, we're able to also build in technical support. So that's our goal. And to have that technical support built into these grants and provide grants for the schools that haven't necessarily received them in the last few years. And in closing, this is our technology vision that's included in the plan, and I just wanted to thank you again for your support for technology in our district, because without that we couldn't do what we do and enable our students to achieve at higher levels. So thank you again, and we invite your input, feedback, and I look forward to hearing from you. I know Rita does too. So that's all we have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amelia and Rita. And I think there is a question, Chris.
Yeah, in reading through this, I have two questions. One is, what is a student response pad?
Student has a clicker that they can choose the options A, B, C, or A, B, C, or D. And then immediately when they respond on the spot, the teacher can view the results. Mm-hmm. And the student's responses appear in a graph, so that they can see if the majority of the students are getting the concept, and they can adjust their teaching as they go along. Did I explain it right? Okay.
Second, are we looking, and is there a value in looking at, what are they, not the whiteboards, but the smart boards?
We have. We've looked at smart boards, and several of the schools have them. They've been able to acquire them through grants. That isn't something that's part of the replacement plan funding, but they have been acquired at a variety of schools through these grants that we've been able to get.
And the last thing, I know in the past the board has had an interest in what happens to the surplus equipment or the equipment that's not as modern, the four-year-old plus equipment. Is that part of the tech plan, looking at how we dispose of that?
That's part of our just general procedures. We haven't included anything specific in terms of a goal or objectives, because we already have a plan on what to do with that equipment. It is surplus, and schools have the option of keeping the equipment on site. They can use the machines standalone, or they can, once they are formally surplus by the board, they can be given to needy families. And we have some of our schools that are also working on community projects with the Rotary and providing the hardware for needy families in the community. So it's part of that same budget.
Wasn't there a time, Russell, when we had some additional money that